Yeah, just me being a couple weeks out of practice is all.
I know, right? Like, it's weird. I was thinking about that. I was like, so normally in highlights we go 1 week, but this is like the first time going 2 weeks out. And so I'm like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it does. It definitely throws the rhythm.
And then again, you know, we were talking in text messages about how it's been 5 years. So like we've been having almost a weekly conversation for 5 years, and then just to go 2 weeks out, you know, like even on vacations and stuff, I'm like, oh, it's Monday, I need to log in, and be like, oh no, I'm on vacation, I shouldn't do that. But this, so it's super weird, man.
It is. It's kind of cool though, how easily it just sort of becomes part of the fabric of the week.
Yeah. Agreed. Did you listen to David's story?
I did, man. That was a really cool interview.
He's a cool dude, man. Like, there's some people in the world who you're just like, man, that dude is so cool. And he's just one of them, man. And in real life, he's the nicest person I've ever met. Like, I did. It was very lucky for that one.
That's awesome, man. Love it when a plan comes together. Honestly. Like that for us.
All right, let's hit an intro and jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right, so you've had 2 weeks. Have you had anything good?
Yeah, I did do something fairly nice. It's from Oscar Blues Brewing.
Okay.
And I got their Mama's Little Yellow Pils. Just, you know, a pilsner, fairly standard fare, you know. But because we live in Phoenix, where it's decided it still wants to be like 110 degrees as we get into September.
Screw you, Phoenix.
I know, man. Seriously, dude. Like, it has been brutal. But so this Pilsner, it's got a decent little bit of hoppiness to it, to where it actually has some bitterness and some flavor to it without it being like super strong and overpowering.
Yeah.
So it's light enough to still be a comfortable sipper on a hot day. But I don't have any confusion as to whether I'm having like just a glass of water or something either.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it kind of hit the sweet spot for this season.
Nice. Oscar Blues is a name I know too. I don't think I've had a lot from them, but it's one I know of.
They're one. They seem to do a pretty good job of coming up with names that catch my attention on a regular basis. So if I'm going by and I'm just looking to grab a sixer of something, it's like, oh,
you got
okay.
Me. You kinda, got me.
I got to try it.
Because, yes, we do judge a book by its cover.
That's why they have title. Covers.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, I've actually I don't know what I was going to say there, but I did get a new sampler pack. I decided to go with something new. And New Belgium, right? That's Fatire, right?
Yep,
so they had a sampler pack. And it's actually a really good sampler pack. So it's got an hazy IPA, a Belgian triple, a dark ale, I think they call it, and then Fatire. And so I know I talked some trash about New Belgium a little while ago, and I think I figured out why Fatire bugs me so much, because I'm always expecting it to be like a dark beer, like an amber or something. And then when I have it, it's not. I don't know what, like, it's not New Belgium's fault that I have this problem. You know, like, I realized this. I poured it and I was like, hang on, this is like a fairly light beer. Like, it's a little darker. It's not like yellow or gold or anything, but I'm like, this is not amber. Like, this, why do I have these like, just looking at it, I knew I had the wrong expectations. And I was like, oh, so I just put it in my memory wrong. And now I've been judging it with disappointment every single time I have it.
You know what, man? That makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because it's like those dark brown bottles. And for some reason, in my head, I know it's not the case, because I've drank plenty of lagers, and it's just, it's a dark bottle because light equal bad.
Yeah.
But like you see that dark bottle and in your head, it's just going to be something darker and heavier. Yeah. It's a good, good lesson for about the importance of, you know, pour it into a glass so you can kind of see what's coming.
And then once I broke that in my brain, I was able to enjoy. I was like, oh, you know what? This is pretty good. The other ones are way better. The other ones in the pack, I'll save that one because otherwise I'm going to run out of things to talk about when it comes to drink recommendations. But I was able to be like, okay, nope, this is a solid burger and a beer kind of beer. Like, it'll do the job. I'm not going to write home about it, but it'll do the job.
Yeah, that's fair, man. That's good.
All right.
And if that's the weak link in a sampler pack, that's a pretty good sampler pack.
Okay, abso-freaking-lutely. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're going to have to brush up our conversation here a little bit because we're continuing from something prior. So the conversation originally started with a challenge I got from my prior mentor, Kevin. I say prior. It's not like he's not mentoring me anymore, but just like schedule-wise, we're just not really like a weekly thing.
Right. So, it's a change in how frequently it happens.
Yeah. Yep. And so he had challenged me around baptism. And after that conversation, he's like, I listened to the podcast. He's like, and I've never been more misquoted in my life. I was like, well, okay. I guess I missed the boat on that one completely on what he was intending. It was still a good process for me. Like, I'm okay with it because I took in information, I processed it. And that's what I'm doing. And then, so that I thought that was interesting that I totally missed it, but I'm still coming around to some fun stuff. And then we talked about, did we go to Mary?
Yeah. There? Our last one, we kind of started off like we were going to talk some transubstantiation stuff building off of baptism.
Right.
And we totally went into Mariology instead.
Well, because that kind of
starts, it connected.
It starts, right?
Absolutely. It definitely connected. But like, it was one of those things where by the end of it, you're like, well, so transubstantiation was kind of in the notes.
It was there, but
yeah.
And I think we'll probably end up being like that again to where like transubstantiation is, I think, the underlying principle.
Right. This idea of a change in our nature.
Yes.
Like that absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so I wanted to ask about that, which is human nature or the sinful nature more specifically, because again, we're talking about baptism. And so, you know, to be very literal in my questioning, like where is the sinful nature? Right. And so like I have two kind of rivaling concepts in my mind. One is that it's in the body. Right. And so that was why we were talking about Mary. Right. Yep. Is because the act of sex is where the sinful nature is passed from mother, father to child, like Adam. So like it's passed physically in our nature down through. And then like reading Paul, it makes it sound like it's more of a spiritual thing to where it's like he's keeping his flesh, you know, under control and all of these different things. And so it makes it sound less about the body and more about like a spiritual aspect of that's where the sinful nature resides. And this is me kind of interpreting that, of course.
Sure. Look, man, here's the deal. St. Paul is a pain in the neck. I love the guy, obviously. He's got Saint in front of his name.
Yep.
Wrote many letters that are like foundational to our understanding of who Christ is and everything. But, you know, acknowledging that this is a very kind of like human and earthly view of heaven. Mm-hmm. But I really hope at some point in heaven I get the opportunity to sit down across from the guy at like a bar or a coffee shop in heaven. And sit there with a couple of drinks in front of us and just be like, okay, so you're talking about the spiritual nature of sin, and you're also talking about how it is the flesh that is the source of your sinfulness, and that if we would just embrace the spirit, man, would you...
Yeah. Go over that one again with me really quick. Like, actually, can you draw a picture? Because I'm going
to... Yeah. So when you say spirit in this letter and you say spirit in this letter, it feels like you're talking about two different spirits and I'm not sure what to do with this. And I feel like there's a decent chance he'd be like, yeah.
That's where he's going to leave it. Yeah, you're probably.
I mean, I got to be honest with you, man. I'm trying to explain things that like made sense to me because Jesus freaking appeared to me and said things, and then I'm trying to tell them to you in like normal human words. Yeah, there's going to be some stuff that didn't track quite perfectly across there. I'm hoping that won't be the way the answer goes, because I like to believe that there won't be frustration in heaven. And if he gives me that, I feel like there's going to be frustration in heaven.
Well, maybe there will be an interpreter. Somebody will be like, no, let me fill in some gaps. Oh, yeah. Thank you, God.
Peter pulling me aside. Look, man. Now you understand.
Now you get what I dealt with. Okay, so take a swing at it. Where is the sinful nature?
It's
right here in my left elbow. That's where,
yeah, I was gonna say, at the risk of being like every bit as frustrating and annoying as I was just complaining about St. Paul, like in our human nature, well, what is that human nature in the flesh or in the spirit? Yes.
Yes.
Like, it's kind of one of those things, I think. So the fallen aspect of it seems to me to be primarily in the spiritual. In terms of like when we talk about what the effects are, they affect body and soul, but it feels like it's mostly in kind of what we would consider the powers of the rational soul. You know, this idea of the darkened intellect where we can't understand things as clearly as we would be able to without original sin.
Yeah.
The weakening of the will. Like, these are spiritual, rational elements to us rather than like our animal instincts.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's kind of where the primary of it is. But at the same time, it's also true that our instincts themselves have gotten misaligned. Like, even those kind of animal elements of us, the things that we desire or the things that we think we desire, even that has gotten skewed by our concupiscence. Yeah. And so,
yeah, because I think of there's a line somewhere in there where it talks about like even the earth groans to be like set right again.
Yes.
And so it feels like Adam's fall, or the curse that was placed on Adam's fall, and that might actually be something to go anyway. Sidetracking, like from that point on, like even the physical realm was set askew, not just the spiritual or the mental, or but like even the ground, the dirt that we walk on is like, oh, I cannot wait to be back to where I'm supposed to be, you know, like carrying the curse sucks. And that's interesting there too, because so if we're talking about the sinful nature as it applies to like the weakened will and all of these things, I mean, that goes back to the curse, right? Like essentially the nature is who we are. We wouldn't have to, in Garden of Eden, we wouldn't have distinguished between our physical and spiritual natures. We would have been one nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we call it the fall, but it's really like it is a fall. Like we chose to be disobedient, but then it's kind of a curse, right? Because like it's God's curse, which is the callback. Because I mean, that's when you think about the earth. Like it's more of like a curse on earth, where you got to toil and you have to bear labor.
But it is a self-inflicted thing. Like,
yeah.
Adam and Eve are still like they work in the garden, but they don't toil. You know what I mean? Like there is still the idea of harvesting, not tilling the soil,
right.
Harvesting.
Right.
Like, so I'm not trying to deny what you're saying. Like right. There is that, but it feels like a lot of it is kind of, it is a curse, but it's a self-inflicted curse. Like it's not a, like less of a God saying, okay, well, because you've done this, here's what I have to do, as opposed to, well, okay, you've done this, which means these things that you had because you hadn't done this, they're gone now. They've been weakened. Because, so like the stuff with the earth, that I agree with you. Like that there is to a certain extent, but it feels like a lot of it is man's harmony with things that has been disrupted, which a great deal of that. Now, not purely.
Sure.
Because again, when we talk about things like natural disasters, you know, the hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, these kinds of things, it's not like those are a matter of my perception.
Right.
You know, like, oh, well, you know, normally I would have just thought that this earthquake was a nice, you know, I don't know, tumble dry for the surface of the earth or something. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that wasn't, that was never a mental construct. But most of the things that happen with us in terms of the weakened will and the darkened intellect, a lot of that to me strikes me as being much more, so the spiritual side of things, I guess, strikes me as much more being like the self-inflicted wounds. Like when you look at what Adam and Eve were grasping at, it was this tree of knowledge. It was this desire to know as God knows so that we could decide for ourselves so we didn't have to trust him anymore.
Yep. Yep.
And so because we've broken that trust, because we don't feel like we can rely on God, as we see immediately when God shows up and they go and hide themselves, a thing that had never happened before. But like, they don't trust God. It's not just that they've done something wrong, but like they can't bring themselves to be in his presence fully. And so because we're not trusting God and we're now relying just on our own intellect, yeah, our intellect's a lot darker.
Yeah.
Because God, who knew everything, was like laying things out for us before. And now we, who know very little, are trying to decide it all for ourselves.
Okay. Yeah. And I get that. And I actually like the distinction that you made there, because, I grabbed a, it's called the, they call it a catechism for first through fourth grade. You remember Kelly Fitzsimmons Burton?
Yeah.
So they wrote basically it's like a kid's, because when we interviewed her for On Highlights, she was like, the worst thing that kids don't know going in is they don't know like the age, they don't know foundational stuff, like big chunks of history. Like this was what happened in the this was a revolution. This was a this. And so they actually wrote like an academic, like first kindergarten, first grade, second through fourth grade. Like these are the questions you should be asking and know about. And it's actually, I read through it and it's pretty good. It's probably more advanced than what I would consider for a first, second, third, fourth grader, but I'm going to try it with my kids and see what happens. But it's Westminster Theology. Okay.
Okay.
And they use reason a lot, right? So like the heaven is the knowledge of God, like, and it's all very reason, philosophy driven.
Sure.
And they pair it with callbacks. So like, again, like salvation is the enlightenment of your will, the fullness, being able to reason and get to God, you know, like doing those things. And of course, I'm doing a terrible job summarizing. Oh. But then what they build is there's like God built in a bunch of callbacks. And so like rather than calling it like a curse, they call it a callback. And so like a tornado and death and all of these things are ultimate callbacks, saying, hey, return to me. Hey, return to me. Hey, return to me. And so you have basically, yeah, like the curse on the earth to draw your reason and your spiritual side back to God to continue to reflect on that. And I was like, that kind of makes sense, because, you know, the no atheists in foxholes, you know, type of a thing. Like when the tornado hits, man, everybody starts to pray. It's one of those things, right? But it's not your body. It's your reason. It's your mind. It's your disposition. It's your soul more than anything.
Absolutely. Although again, like I'm always so nervous about any like attempts to draw like a really clear line between them.
Right.
Because if you think about it, why are your reason and your soul worried? Because
your body is in danger.
Our reason and our soul knows that our soul and our body are supposed to be connected.
Right.
Like that ultimately, if I am not both body and soul, I am incomplete. I mean, that's what death is, separation of body and soul. So even like the souls in heaven, they are dead. They're still like the soul is still a soul and is still functioning as a soul, but the person is incomplete without their body. Mm-hmm. And so, like, even those callbacks, like, it is our bodily and our animal instincts that God is using to kind of call us back. So not as like a conflict between the two.
Right.
But as this idea of, you know what? Okay, look, you've darkened your intellect. You've weakened your will. But you know what you still have? You've got animal instinct.
Yep.
And like fight or flight. I am going to use that as many times as I need to get you to like take flight from the things that you need to.
Yep.
And to get you to sit there and wrestle with the things that I need you to as many times as we have to duke it out for you to like, in your dim human understanding,
right,
to get that slight little candle flicker to like bring you back.
Yep. Yep.
So like, I 100% agree with the idea of the callback, but I just, it's important for us to remember that like,
right. Agreed.
It's the pairing.
And that's the hard part when you're talking about like, where exactly is the sinful nature? Because they aren't separated. Right.
Right.
But then that the hard part when it comes to that is baptism, right? So let's get there. And so like when we are baptized and we go into the water, we're identified with the death of Christ and we're identified with the resurrection of Christ. We are essentially born again from water and the Holy Spirit, like all of those things in baptism that happen, regeneration, yep, recapitulation, like all of the big giant words that I like.
All of those Asians.
Yeah, all the big words I don't get to use since college. All of that happens, but like if you look at it, it looks like the wafer, right? Like it looks like Brandon did just wet, right?
Yeah, Brandon jumped in a pool.
Yeah, so that's where the transubstantiation piece came into it for me, is because I was like, okay, so like my cells didn't change, right? And in some of my other readings around baptism and identification with Christ and all of these different things, I was like, my physical body, I don't think it changed. Like my cells, like, I'm doomed at 45, the wheels are going to fall off. And, you know, like, that's just my genetics.
Man, I'm hoping I get to 45 before it happens.
I should stop this self-fulfilling prophecy nonsense and like, just like, power of positive thinking, folks. I am not going to fall apart at 45.
I like it. I like it.
But, you know, like that didn't change. And even so, like the question of like, well, you're still sinning, right? Like, and sin is still real. Like you would think that if you were born again, you'd just be like, nah, I'm good. Yeah, and there are miraculous conversions. I've known people who were like, I was addicted to this. I prayed the next day. I never had it again. It was miracle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But
for most of us, like that habitual sin is still there and you still got to deal with it. And so you're like, okay, well then what changed? Did I just get wet? Because it doesn't seem
right.
Right. And that's,
no, I agree. And this, I love this, combining this with like our idea with the understanding of transubstantiation. Cause I think that fits really beautifully, you know, cause like we talked very kind of briefly and tangentially last time about the idea that like, you know, transubstantiation, it's the substance, the underlying stuff that changes, and the accidents, the physical temporary characteristics and all that, those remain the same. But that the underlying like truth of the thing has changed. And I think that is a pretty good description of what happens in baptism. I mean, I'm sure we could probably like really nitpick and talk about it being more of a restoration than a transubstantiation. You know, that idea that like it's a return to what we were originally, that idea of, like scraping some of the layers of crap off of the divine image and likeness that we're created in, rather than like changing that. Because even prior to our baptism, we're still ultimately created good, and we are still the image and likeness of God. But I think in terms of what you're talking about, in terms of this change that does happen, this real effective change that a sacrament brings about, I think transubstantiation is not a bad way to phrase it.
Well, yeah, like, because I mean, because that there is that whole born again thing, right? Like, and that's where, and I understand the restoration piece because I agree the originally born good, but basically, you know, Jesus is the one that said it. If you don't carry your cross, right? If you aren't born again, then you're not getting in. And you're like, well, what does that mean, right? Like, what does being born again mean? You can't, obviously, you can't go back in the womb. Thank you, Pharisees, for asking the question so that we don't.
I think that one was that. Well, come on now, that was one of the good Pharisees too. Like, yeah. That's not just any old Pharisee. That wasn't someone trying to set a trap. That was one who was like,
actually, okay, like, I don't
Lord,
get it,
I believe you. Like, I believe you. I just, like, I can't crawl back in. Yeah, like, ugh.
Yeah, I'm not doing that, man.
Right. Like, no. And Jesus is like, yeah, you've got to be born again of water and the Spirit. And I think that combination of the water and the Spirit, I feel like that ties into a lot of what we were talking about this idea that this rebirth is both a physical and a spiritual reality. Like, it is for the whole of the person. You know, we need that water because we are physical beings.
Right.
And so when the water is poured over us in baptism, it is not just symbolic of the idea of us taking a bath. It's actually us being cleansed.
Yeah.
But it's also not just that. Like, a lot of times when we think about the waters of baptism, that's kind of the language we use. But you've talked about this idea of being born into a new life, which I'm glad you have, because, like, that's a key thing that for some reason we seem to overlook a lot.
Yeah.
Like, the water is death. When we go under the water, we are being drowned.
Yeah.
And then coming back up out of the water, this new creature. And so, like, there is a death. Now, obviously not a literal death.
Right.
You know, in the same way that, like, the medievals used to think that every time a person went to sleep, they died, and then they woke up and their spirit had returned to them, you know, like.
Right.
So it's not like we're actually, you know, no one's holding the kid under, like when the baby's being baptized.
Right.
We're not taking this too literally.
Right.
But on some level, there does have to actually be a death that happens.
You have to die to self. I mean, like, Paul uses that language, I believe, as well, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, like, I, you know, it's kind of that that G.K. Chesterton thing. He says, no one has ever succeeded in being original by trying to be. So I'm definitely not trying to be original here. Like, yeah, no. Jesus.
Yeah.
Paul, Philip, Peter. Like, they're all pretty much across the board on this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, hey, yeah, no. If you want to live, you're going to have to die.
Right. And that's where baptism can't really just be a cleansing of the sin, even though it is, which again, it's, and
the word just is so key because we're not saying that it's not
right.
a cleansing, but like you said, it's not just
it's
a cleansing.
Both and, like that not is, either or. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cleansing, but that cleansing, that's like the old door-to-door salesman thing of getting your foot in the door, which is like a very literal thing for like keeping them from slamming the door on you by getting your foot there. Like, the cleansing, yes, that's a thing that happens. But ultimately, and this kind of ties back into that idea of transubstantiation, and again, and maybe this is my own slightly, like, I probably tend a little bit more, in spite of all of my, like, hemming and hawing about trying to make sure we don't leave the body out of this, I'm probably a little bit more, like, spirit-focused on things. And that's probably why I hem and haw so much, is I know I'm not actually keeping balance.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to, like, artificially, like, force it in there.
I feel that.
But, like, for me, that's part of where baptism, so much of it really is that spiritual element of things. Because when I was baptized, I did not stop being my parents' son. However, I became a son of the Father. When my sister was baptized, She was not less my sister, but she is now a sister of Christ and a co-heir of his.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to a certain extent, and I think this ties back to one of our like much earlier discussions many, many moons ago, one of those ones that comes up every once in a while for us, but that idea of like hating mother and father.
Yeah.
In order to serve the Lord. Like, yeah, no, I love my mom and dad. I'm super grateful that God gave them to me.
Yes.
I love my sister. She's fantastic. And I'm so glad that she's part of my life. But while those are my first affiliations, they're not my most important ones anymore.
Right. Yep.
I had to die in those relationships to be born into this relationship with God and with Christ.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I did. I had to, while still being me, a lot more of me now than there was when I was baptized, mind you, but like still being very much me, but not the me that I was.
Yeah.
And it gets really confusing when you're baptized as a baby talking about this stuff, because it's like, I literally have no other experience to pull from.
Yeah.
My entire conscious life, I have been in this state as baptized.
Right. Right.
And so I would be, that's one of those things where I would be kind of curious to like have this conversation with someone who was a convert to Christianity later in life, who like got baptized, and see kind of how did they feel about it at the time?
Yeah.
Because it's just not a perspective that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine is retrospective as well, because like I was baptized as a baby, but then I also went back and got dunked because I wanted, you know, the Baptists have their thing. And I was like, oh, I want to be cool with the Baptists. I don't mind being going under, you know? So
plus we live in Phoenix. Well, even in the winter, yeah. It's not that cold.
Oh, dude, no, it was the coldest baptismal I've ever been in. it was freezing. But
okay, so you felt that icy hand of death, yes, in it. Okay, yes. Cool.
but no, like, it's interesting that you say that, because like, that's one of the things that God has had to work on me, is that him telling me, hey, they're not your kids. They're my kids. You're the steward of my children, right? And so like changing how I look at that is different, because again, that's the thing, right? Like, it's, we think that these things are ours, but we had to die, right? Like, and when you die and you go into a new family, there's new rules, right? And there's a new structure. Absolutely. There's a new hierarchy. So I'm not the dad anymore. God is. And that God is their dad. Like, I'm a steward now, because they were baptized as babies too, right? So like, we are living, This is a house that serves the Lord. So I am a steward until they are willing to step out on their own and recognize his leadership directly. But that is, you know, and again, we got to wrap it up here. And if I was going to head into a life lesson, I would just, I don't know that I have like a lesson to take away from it, other than recommending that you highly recommending wrestling with the idea of what your baptism meant. Mm-hmm. Like I read a book called Not I, But Christ on Galatians 2:20. And that's where I get a lot of my identification with Christ and death and then resurrection at the same time. And then I'm drawing that correlation to baptism. And that was really big, because it changed my understanding that like the life, when I say the life that we live is Christ, right? Like, you're actually talking about the thing that animates you is Christ, is God. And that changes everything when you're looking at the world and when you're looking at yourself. And that happened effectually at baptism. And then you of course you renew it over and over and over again as you continue to die to self, as you continue to live for Christ, all of these things over and over and over again. But day one, right, was that baptism. And so really wrestling with what that meant and what it means for you going forward, I think is a big deal.
Absolutely, man. And like, that's, I'm kind of going in a similar direction with it, in terms of this idea of like, we have to build on it. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got to recognize that the gifts that we're given are for a purpose. And you're right. You're not going to find that purpose if you don't think about what the thing you received means. But like, ultimately that idea that, when I was baptized, I became a son of God a co-heir of Jesus Christ. And that's incredible.
It's a big deal.
And the end. Nope. Nope, 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 nope. Not the end. The beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, I have become part of this family, and I have received, again, I'm a co-heir with Christ. Heaven and eternity are now promised to me as an heir, mm-hmm. as an equal heir with Jesus Christ. Without any risk of blasphemy. Holy crap. Yeah. Like, literally and legitimately. Holy crap. Okay, cool. However, I was saved for my sake, but going back to what you said earlier, that word just is so important. Mm. I was saved for my sake. God desired to save me as an end in and of myself. However, he did not just desire to save me. Mm. He also desired to save you. He desired to save your wife. He desired to save your children. He desired to save the students that I teach. Mm-hmm. I have received this gift for the purpose of sharing it. Not at any cost to myself. Because, like, my gift doesn't become diminished. If anything, it becomes increased right. in the sharing. But, like, I have to recognize that purpose, and then I have to participate in that purpose. Mm-hmm. If I have been made a new creature, I have to recognize my new mission, what I was created yep. for, and I got to start doing it.
Yep. And I think when you wrestle with all of these things, you'll see that God gives so that you can give, yep. right? God gave you new life so that you can take that to someone else. So that you get like,
exactly.
It's always moving forward. It's never meant to just sit and sit in one spot. So it,
well, and again, we're created in his image and likeness.
Yep.
So that means we are, to the lesser extent that we're capable, we are to do what he has done. Mm-hmm. He has given, we must give.
Yep. Yep. Truth. Love it. Oh, and if you're looking for something to give people, we have coffee. You can buy some coffee. We roast it fresh. Keep one bag for yourself. Give one bag to a friend. That's the best way to do it, in my opinion. And yeah, we would love for you to get some of that. We also have some swag, some cool shirts. AJ's rocking a Raptor Juice shirt. It's fantastic. We got a couple of...
Only thing keeping me going on a Monday.
Got a few more up there. That's some pretty neat designs, I think. I like them. I wear... They're basically the only shirts I wear anymore. So, but there's also coffee mugs. Most importantly, though, there is some coffee. That's how you support these meaningful conversations. That's how you can support the podcast, is by allowing us to roast some fresh coffee and ship it straight to you. Got anything else on your mind there, man?
So much, man. This is the downside to us taking a couple of weeks off for those highlights in between.
Yeah.
Like, feels like we jumped right back into the conversation, and I don't want to let it end.
Yep, but now you got 2 weeks to think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
2 weeks to ponder.
Right on, right on. Well, everybody, and with that, make sure you jump in there and listen to these highlights. These highlights are really good this year. Not that I thought they were bad before, but I really like them. I'm really excited about them this year.
There's a reason this time we're stretching them into two-parters, yeah, because there is... too much good stuff.
Long and good. And we got back to where AJ and I both were meeting with people and talking. And so the dynamic's back to the way it used to be. So I'm excited for them. I hope you enjoy them. I hope they're a blessing to you. And with that, everybody, we will say
adieu.